talking on wars, big fights, and griping about the way things ought to be. And I don't mind them switching sides and standing up for things they believe in. When they're running down my country, man, they're walking on the fight beside me. Yeah, walking on the fight beside me. Running down the way of life, I'm fighting and talking down to me. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. You're running down my country, man. You're walking on the fight beside me. The guy who claims he just don't believe in the fight. And I wonder just how long the rest of us can count on being free. They love our milk and honey, but they preach about some other way of living. When they're running down my country horse, they're walking on the fight beside me. Yeah, walking down real life, I'm fighting and fought and died to be. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. When you run down my country, man, you walking on the fight beside me. Yeah, walking on the fight beside me. Running down real life, I'm if you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be warned. When you run it down my country, man, you walking on right beside me.
Yes, when you're running down my country, you're walking down the fighting side of me. And that's the end of this program here on LightResistanceRadio.com. Well, lots more news and views for our people. And, of course, those are the European founding settler people of the Dominion of Canada, the United States of America, the Dominions of Australia, New Zealand, the Republic of South Africa, Rhodesia, and all of you who may be listening on this morning in the European heartland. Well, lots more news and views for our people. And... excuse me a sec. Some really interesting things have come my way. This is taken out of the weekend National Post. It's a half-page ad. A magenta and pictures and so on. It appears to be... it's a film series. They don't actually tell you where it is, but... it's The Holocaust and Now. The Holocaust and Genocide. The Holocaust and Legacy Now. Don't think for a moment that maybe the ethnic destruction of, let's say, a third of the population of Cambodia by that Maoist monster Pol Pot, or, let's say, the expulsion of 16 million ethnic Germans in the biggest ethnic cleansing probably in history, which took place in 1945-48, the expulsion of ethnic Germans from Silesia, from East Prussia, from parts of the Ukraine, from the lands of the Danube Swabians or the Donau Schwaben, which would be in what was then northern Yugoslavia and western Romania. Anyway, no, not that. So this is, they'll have some feature films, one of them on November the 6th, Cheating Hitler. This is to register now for Holocaust Education Week. Okay, well, I mean, I have no problem with an ethnic group putting on, you know, their own self-serving account of history, but let's see, who's sponsoring this? The UJA, that's the United Jewish Federation of Greater Toronto, the Sarah and Chaim Neuberger Holocaust Education Center. Okay. Then, a bit more worrisome, media sponsors, CTV, that's, and the National Post. Well, as I say, I don't have a problem with
an ethnic group putting, you know, putting out their account of history. That's fair enough. But I don't like to see supposedly media outlets supporting that. You know, that's really is ethnic propaganda. Anyway, strange conviction down in London, Ontario, of a police officer in the handling of a Native woman, a Native Indian. Now, she was 39. She had 11 children, seemed to be a drug addict, and so on. A judge convicted the police officer of I believe it was negligent homicide and a failing to provide the necessities of life. And you might wonder, well, how did all that come about? The person in question, Cindy Christjohn, she's an Indian, seemed to be in an advanced state of drug intoxication. The prosecutor told the family, that's the family's lawyer, Miss Casper, that he would seek a tougher sentence. The family is hoping for a jail sentence. Her sister, Christjohn, said in an email. She added that Miss Christjohn, that's the dead one, was an active family-oriented person, who even in her last months was not a lot like she'd been portrayed in her final 2 days. She was loving and full of love. You're kind of redundant, aren't you? This is quite common. The person who dies is suddenly a saint. Now, she was a severe drug addict. Of course, I don't suggest that a person deserves to die because of that, but let's have some balance. Okay. Police said they received several 911 calls on September 7, 2016, after Miss Christjohn ran into traffic and tried to jump into a van moving along the street. I mean, this is demented behavior. A day earlier, she'd been found in the streets, confused and speaking unclearly, and a different London constable had called an ambulance for her, but she left hospital against the wishes of medical staff. Now, you know, she's, what's her age again? 39. She's an adult. You know, if we don't want to have a complete nanny state, and don't forget, if you have a nanny state, you know, the state that can give you and that takes care of everything, also restricts everything. You know, the only way you can be fully cared for is basically if you're incarcerated. That's it. You know, the person, if we want everything from the state, we then have to be prepared to give up all our rights. So I say this in trying to create some understanding of how the police officer handled it. So 2 days in a row, she'd been behaving in an erratic and bizarre fashion. So what did she do? Well, she ran into traffic and tried to jump into a van. And then she'd be, that's the day of when she died. Then earlier, the day before, she'd been wandering the streets and incoherent and was sent to hospital, but she got away from hospital, she didn't stay. The accused, the one, the police constable who has been
found guilty in her death. Now, he didn't kill her. He just didn't provide the necessities. Constable Deering detained Ms. Christian after the 9/11 calls because the Ontario Provincial Police had put out a warrant for arrest for breaching a condition of a previous release from custody. So she has a warrant out for this woman for what's called a breach of undertaking. She was probably out on bail with some conditions, and she breached the conditions. This is not an innocent person. It was then at 5:45 p.m. That he arranged to bring her to OPP officers, critical to his conviction for criminal negligence causing death, was that he told the OPP that she'd been medically cleared. In fact, though, a paramedic had merely looked at her through the car window. Also, during the approximately 45 minutes she was in the back seat of the car while he drove to meet the OPP, her condition deteriorated. Constable Deering testified he believed Miss Christian just needed to ride out the high. Well, he's not a doctor. He perhaps uses the best judgment he can. His defense lawyer, Lucas O'Hara, argued that the constable had made an error in judgment, a reasonable one in light of his experience with meth users and a conversation he'd had with an emergency services supervisor while she was detained. Even when, after the OPP brought Miss Christian to the Elgin detachment at 7-Eleven, the video actually showed officers dragging her limp body along the floor to the cell area. Officers believed she was simply being uncooperative. It was not until 7:28, as she lay unconscious in the cell, that the OPP called in a medical emergency. It's unfortunate. But it's also unfortunate. This is where people have to take some responsibility for their own lives. It's unfortunate if you so abuse drugs or meth that you're essentially out of it. Apparently, she suffered some sort of heart attack. While there was no suggestion during the trial that her Indigenous heritage played a role in police decisions involving her, quote, it has been observed that Indigenous women and girls are particularly vulnerable to stereotyping. Now, let's get a hold on this. Stereotyping. That means a stereotype is a generalization based on fact. Now, a generalization is always just that, a generalization, a conclusion, or let's say a prediction based on fact, a prediction that it's not necessarily going to be 100%. That's what a generalization is. All cats meow. Well, there are actually some who don't, but not many. But a generalization of cats meow, I see a cat, and I'll say, well, at some point, that cat's going to meow. I'm generalizing based on a fact. That is generally true. No, but not always. There's a reasonable person does allow for exceptions or individual differences. But it's one way to organize reality. Is stereotyping or generalization. There's nothing wrong with it. In fact, if we didn't, we would approach absolutely every situation in a state of complete being completely flummoxed and completely open-minded, which is not a bad thing to be open-minded, but
to organize reality, what we have to be able to predict things. And it would be safe to say, most of the time, that if I come upon a new cat, at some point that cat will meow. Probably will not bark at me. You see what I mean? There's absolutely nothing wrong with stereotypes. So, okay, the stereotypes, it's funny here, or not funny, it shows the bizarre nature of our court system. Even though her did not appear to that her Indian background had anything to do with the way she was treated, nonetheless, it's being observed here. It is being observed that Indigenous women and girls are particularly vulnerable to stereotyping. This includes stereotypes related to alcohol and drug abuse. Now, the fact is, many Native women have a serious problem with alcoholism, drug abuse, and in many cases, prostitution, or as is more delicately put, being involved in a sex trade. yes, trading their, you know, what's for money, not to recruit about it, but. I think there's nothing wrong at all with experienced officers predicting certain outcomes from their experience. Many of the Native women that they will come across in difficult situations, and that's what I mean, a difficult situation, drunk, stoned, or prostituting themselves. This is relatively typical behavior of a certain type of Indian. I don't mean to suggest all Indian women by any means, but this is the sort of behavior that all too often gets them into trouble. We've had much. public agonizing and so on over the past number of years about the murdered and missing Native women, and it's supposedly a sign of the terrible racist society that all these Indian women have been murdered and so on. Now, this is an easy libel to throw at people, to throw at us. But it is just that, a libel. In the case of the murdered Indian women, an RCMP report in 2014 said that of the approximately 1,100 Indian women who I think had been murdered since about 1980, 90% of the cases had been solved, which is all within a fraction of 1%, the same as for non-Native women. And it found that of those murdered Indian women, about 75% were murdered by somebody with which they had a close relationship, usually a husband, lover, boyfriend, and sometimes or some other relative. Over 75% of these cases involved the abuse of drugs or alcohol. So how is that the result of racism being killed mostly by their own people, and often the incident brought on by, or at least exacerbated by, drugs or alcohol? Far from being a problem of racism, this is a problem of misbehavior among themselves. And then, of course, the second aspect, the missing women. Okay, most of the women who are missing are adults. Maybe not all, but most are.
This brings up a very important point. What are the Indian communities, the bands, the chiefs, and they call themselves First Nations, nations. When a nation takes care of its own people. I mean, that's what a nation does. Why aren't they taking care of their own people? Why are these people missing? Now, there is no serious suggestion that they're being kidnapped en masse by evil white people who swoop down on a reservation, grab an Indian woman, and take her off somewhere, and she disappears. So, where do these women disappear? Well, quite often, they leave reservations and go to a nearby big city, are involved with drugs and alcohol, and very often prostitution. Not always. And of course, some of these missing women have never been found. But rather than occasioning a national inquiry, what should be done, and if government assistance may be needed, perhaps they could be helped with this, but is the onus should be thrown back on the Indians. Look, you claim to be nations. You have a fair degree of self-government. Well, then do it. Take care of your own people. Monitor your women. I have suggested before that a buddy system could be created where each woman, let's say 14 or over, is paired with somebody else, and once a day you check in with your buddy. And, you know, if the buddy is not around, then you immediately alert other people that, you know, so-and-so is missing. That would seem to be the responsible thing. And, you know, underlying this, and of course we're not supposed to talk about it, is the fact that many of these women disappear to pursue a life of drugs, alcoholism, and sometimes quite often prostitution in the big city. And these are dangerous behaviors. With a much greater likelihood to leading to death or violence. This has to be talked about instead of the boo-hoo-hoo. Well, anyway, last week in Winnipeg, a three-year-old child named Hunter, he's Indian, although at first we weren't told that. As usual, it's a very slow striptease, not because the media wants to keep us in suspense, but because the media does not usually want to willingly tell us something negative about any of the privileged minorities, in this case being Native Indians. So anyway, story was, Hunter was stabbed many times by, well, it turns out, the accused is the on-again, off-again boyfriend of his mother. Now, Hunter, it would appear, was left alone. He's 3 years old. Mother goes off to the tavern and drinks, and meets up with her son again, on again, off again, boyfriend. They have words, and she leaves, and he leaves. Now, it's not clear when she got home, but by the time she got home, he'd been there and had stabbed Hunter many times. On the weekend, he was on life support, and they withdrew the life support, and Hunter died. As the story developed last week, there was a vigil near where Hunter lived, and it was clear from many of the people at the vigil that he was a Native Indian. There were people there beating on tom-toms and chanting and so on. So on the weekend, there was a reaction to the story, and there was a spokesman. She was some sort of a counselor. I don't mean an elected counselor, but a social worker type of person for the Ojibwe band. Then apparently there's an Ojibwe band near Winnipeg to which Hunter's family had belonged. And this woman was going on about the community is hurting. Well, okay, I can buy that. And so much healing must be done, and people are rallying around the mother and the father, who apparently was nowhere to be found, but apparently did show up. And let's see. Yes, the two grandmothers had both sent some sort of a bouquet or something of that nature with the wording, to our little angel, all love, etc. And not to be nasty about it, but I mean, where were the grandmothers when the kid was being stabbed? I mean, who's in charge? And then, of course, as I say, the counselor went on to say,
you guessed it, yeah, it's probably somehow racism. Now, okay, you scratch your head furiously and try to figure this one out. Well, wait a sec. It wasn't a racist, at least the accusation is, who stabbed little Hunter. It was supposedly the ex-boyfriend. So how's that racism? Well, it was also apparently the residential schools.
Now, see, that's a great excuse. The residential schools were a now much maligned institution that began in 1885 and continued on and off up until the early 90s. What they was an effort by the Dominion government to deal with trying to transition mostly Stone Age people, namely the Indians, many of them nomadic, into the edges those days, the 19th century. How do you do it? Well, the idea was, in some Native communities, there were already schools more established areas of the country. In other cases, there were not. So the idea was, bring the Native children to school, to schools. And because population was sparse, and many of these people were nomadic, the idea was to bring them to residential schools, where they would, like boarding schools, where they would be, where they would reside for 9 or 10 months of the year, and would be educated in English, or in some cases French, so they would get one of the languages that they would need to function in our society. And some rudimentary, reading, writing, arithmetic, all the things that they would need. And there have been many honest Indians who have said, as difficult as the separation was from their families, they got through these residential schools the skills that they needed to make it in life. Now that was entirely decent and honest. However, these schools are being maligned as just beyond terrible. They destroyed the Indian culture. Well, they didn't. They destroyed the Indian culture. They damaged families. Yes, family separation is difficult. But it may also be pointed out that many white people, white kids, were sent either to big cities to be with relatives or others to complete high school, if they're a very isolated community that wasn't a high school, or if they were slightly, if they were better off sometimes to boarding schools in the belief, rightly or wrongly, that they'd get a better education there. And no doubt about it, separation from your family is difficult. But that's not the same thing as a genocidal policy. Anyway, though, the current cultural Marxist politically correct notion is that these schools were designed entirely to destroy the native people, but that was not in fact the case. So you say, well, what does that have to do with the brutal attack, and in this case actually the murder a 3-year-old little hunter. Well, that's a very good question. What does it have to do? Frankly, it has absolutely nothing to do with it. Hunter, we don't have to assume. The mother, Hunter's mother. Hunter's 3. I don't think any report I've seen has the age of the mother being mentioned. But let's say she's 30. Okay. At no time during her lifetime has there been a residential school. So she didn't go to a residential school. Well, what about the lover? The on-again, off-again boyfriend? Well, we don't know his age either. But let's say he's older. He's 45. He never went to a residential school. How does this tell you anything about what was done? The fact is, it doesn't tell you anything about what was done. This is a tragic story. I would think at least partially of the neglect of the little boy. Why was he alone at home when he was attacked? Good question. Well, we're not told. We're not given any answer. But the depravity of a person who would knife repeatedly a little boy. I don't know, was this to get back at the girlfriend for breaking up? We're not told. Perhaps we don't know, actually, at this point. But whatever the cause. And there could be no justifiable cause for doing that to a child. Or, frankly, doing it to anybody. But, okay, to a child. The easy thing, of course, is but blame racism, blame white society. White society didn't do it. White society did not destroy that little boy. Presumably, again, we're not given that much information. The boyfriend is an Indian, Native Indian. How can white society be blamed in any way, shape, or form for what the depraved person? Whether it was, of course, at this point, he's just the accused, did. Well, we can't be. And I think we should be very assertive in rejecting this, not only because it is phony guilt being pushed upon us, which is bad for us, but it's also very mischievous for the Native people because it gives them an alibi. Things go wrong in our lives. We drink too much. We are prone to homicidal acts of violence. But it's not our fault. It's colonialism. It's the residential schools. No. It's your fault. And you know, people respond to expectations. And as a former teacher, I'm still a teacher, but I'm not actually practicing. But as a teacher, that's one of the things that you learn, or you should learn. Students will respond to your expectations. First of all, you have to be very clear what your expectations are. And you know, of course, in the real world, you've got to be reasonable in your expectations. But if you expect little, very often, that's exactly what you'll get. Or I should say, if you demand little, very often, you know, that is exactly what you will get. So, by providing Indians with a couple of easy alibis, that is colonialism. Colonialism is what keeps them, many of them, but poor. Colonialism, you know, if they get drunk and hurt somebody or hurt themselves, or it's colonialism, or Susie goes missing, it's the residential schools. No, this is the residential schools. They're not around anymore. That's not an explanation for anything. It would be like an Irishman today who commits crimes say, well, it's the potato famine. Yeah, it was the potato famine, 1846 to 1848. That's like, you know, 160 years ago. That doesn't explain, actually pushing 180 years ago. That doesn't explain a thing about your behavior today. And that's why I find this cultural Marxist victim game overall bad for everybody. It's bad because it falsely saddles whites with phony guilt, which weakens us and makes us susceptible to financial shakedowns and compensation for something we didn't do. But it also treats minorities like the Indians or Native people like children from whom less can be expected. They're not that responsible, you know. It was colonialism. No, it's not. You live in a modern world, be independent, take care of yourself, fulfill your responsibilities, don't get blind drunk, don't get, you know, out of your gourd high, and don't be violent. That should be the expectation. Rather than, when they do seriously misbehave, there's always somebody around to make an excuse for them. Oh, well, it's not really their fault. Yeah, it is their fault. There is no way that whichever person did that, whether it's the accused, I mean, the ex-boyfriend is who is the accused, and which it might seem superficially as likely, there is no excuse for whoever did that to repeatedly stab and murder the little boy. There is no excuse. And there should be no excuse readily provided, you know, with, the same thing goes with blacks. Even in our justice system, we've got judges who want to say, well, we've got to take into account the fact they're black. Why? The accused. Well, racism. In fact, I actually saw this just recently. Some sociologist with some African name was talking about the horrific gang violence in Toronto, which of course is, though he didn't say it directly, is black. The gangs that are shooting at each other regularly in Toronto are black or Somali, if you want to make a distinction between blacks and Somalis. But this sociologist said, well, we have to take into account, we have to have a holistic approach to this. I always get worried when I hear that, holistic. So we need more community programs, more recreation centers. I'm not necessarily opposed to the idea of recreation centers and so on. I think that is simplistic. Then he goes on to say, but we also have to deal with poverty and racism. Well, wait a second. Are you suggesting the young Negroes who have guns they shouldn't have, they have them illegally, of course, they're shooting at other young Negroes, are doing it because of whites? You might have a point if it were whites marauding around looking for stray Negroes to shoot. There might be a point there about racism, maybe. But that's not the case. That's an easy alibi. Instead of reading the Riot Act to their own communities and saying, especially to the young people, behave. And trying to figure out why they misbehave. Well, I'll tell you, it's not that much of a mystery. You have an 82% illegitimacy rate among Negroes in Canada, and it's the same in the United States. So you have highly dysfunctional families. There is a good deal of the problem.
And maybe that's where the solutions should begin. But again, these are solutions that blacks have to take. And white society, or our rascally leaders, really, do blacks no favor, and us a big injustice by throwing up these false causes like racism. Well, let's have a little bit more lively conclusions. So I'm going to take my musical break now. I'm going to play some Hank Williams Jr. Hank, of course, the son of Hank Williams Sr., has developed his own style and over the years, and a very effective style. I call it country rock. This is Hank Williams Jr. and Family Tradition. This is Paul Fromm. You're on the Fighting Side of Me.
Along. money and we poured in the blood of the Tennessee mare and the Tennessee stud. Now we got a little baby on the cabin floor, a little horse coat playing round the door. And I love the girl with the golden hair and the Tennessee stud loved the Tennessee mare. The Tennessee stud was long and lean, the color of the sun and his eyes were green. Thank you. marchers home. And it puts pressure on a man. It never lets his heart call his hand. Thank you.
Hank Williams Jr. This is Paul Fromm. You're all the fighting side of me. Back with you again tomorrow, same time, midnight Eastern time. Shows repeated at 8 in the morning and 4 in the afternoon. All of those are Eastern Standard Time. And I sign up tonight, as I always do, with the anthem of the real Canada, the Maple Leaf Forever.
In days of yore, from Britain's shore, Wolfe, the dauntless hero, came and planted firm Britannia's flag on Canada's fair domain. Here may it wave, our boast, our pride, and joined in love together. The thistle, shamrock, rose, and twine, the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our queen, and heaven bless the maple leaf forever. Heights and Lundy's Lane, our brave fathers side by side for freedom, homes and loved ones dear, firmly stood and nobly died. And those dear rights which they maintained, we swear to yield them never. Our watchword evermore shall be the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our queen, and heaven bless the maple leaf forever. Our fair dominion now extends from Cape Race to Nootka Sound. May peace forever be our lot, and plenteous store abound. And may those ties of love be ours, which discord cannot sever, and flourish green o'er freedom's home, the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our queen and heaven.